It's the 10% Happier Podcast. I'm Dan Harris. Hey, gang, here's a question. Can you maintain your optimism when everything is going wrong? When, for example, you fall on your ass, figuratively or literally, in front of a large crowd of people? That is one of the many issues we're going to talk about today with Dua Lipa, the multi-Grammy-winning singer-songwriter who's out with a new record called Radical Optimism. We talk about what she means by radical optimism and how she applies it when she literally falls on stage, how she resists the temptation to fully armor herself, given how much scrutiny she endures, her famous work ethic and packed schedule, her non-negotiable daily practices or daily-ish practices, including meditation, her social media hygiene, specifically how she stays sane with 80 million people following her on Instagram alone. We also have a great conversation about creativity, including how she builds psychological safety with her team in the studio and out on tour. In other words, how she makes everybody feel comfortable speaking up, even though she is definitely the boss and is also a panoramically famous person. Why she had to write 97 songs to make this one album, which only has 11 songs, and her concept of writing herself into a good idea. As she says, and I love this, you have to be shit in order to be good. Dua Lipa, right after this. As they say at Amica, empathy is our best policy. Whether you need auto, home, or life insurance, they're ready to help you protect the things that matter most to you. They're a mutual company, customer-owned, in service to you. Amica representatives are here when you need them, and you can take comfort knowing a real person will be there on the phone to take care of you, because the greatest measure of their success is your satisfaction. You can count on T-Mobile to help keep you connected. After investing billions to light up their network from big cities to small towns, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, when you switch to T-Mobile, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus Verizon and AT&T. Visit your neighborhood store or T-Mobile.com to switch. Plan savings with T-Mobile. Third line free on essentials via monthly bill credits versus comparable available plans. Plan features may vary. Credits stop if you cancel or change plans. Audible lets you enjoy all your audio entertainment in one app. You will always find the best of what you love or something new to discover. They offer an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers and new releases to celebrity memoirs, mysteries and thrillers, motivation, wellness, business, and more. What I've been checking out recently is called Our Share of Night. It's technically, I guess, a horror, but it's definitely literature. I mean, it's incredibly well written, absolutely fascinating. And it really does rhyme with some of the themes that we explore on this show. I highly recommend it, although I'm only through the first 15-20% of it, but already I highly recommend it. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/10% or text 10% to 500-500. That's audible.com/10% or text 10% to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. audible.com/10%. Dua Lipa, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much, Dan. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Excited to have you on. This is one of the only interviews I've ever done where my 9-year-old son thought I might be approaching coolness.
Oh, that's very sweet. I think you're very cool already. I don't think you needed me on the show to make you any cooler.
Well, I appreciate that. Let me start with a very unoriginal question, but I'm genuinely curious. How did you get turned on to the concept of radical optimism, and why did you find it sufficiently appealing to name your whole record after it?
Radical optimism was a term that I got introduced to through a friend of mine when we were doing a conversation for his podcast called Are We On Air? And it was something that just really struck me. I was I was doing my last album tour. And even though it was such an incredible tour, it was 97 shows in the space of a year. So many changes had happened just in my work life, in my everyday, in the, especially after coming out of the pandemic and going full throttle into, you know, performing around the world and experiencing different crowds and, you know, the ups and downs of touring and things arriving, not arriving on time, things being, you know, falling over on stage, whatever it may be. It was like, there was a lot of ups and downs in the midst of the tour itself. And so when Radical Optimism was said to me, it just really struck a chord of becoming adaptable no matter the situation and staying optimistic even when things don't go your way. And sometimes that can be like the hardest thing to do, is staying optimistic when everything feels like it's falling apart around you, or you're in such shaky ground, or you're just in a place of, I don't know, sometimes I say like bad things come in threes. So it's never like one thing that goes wrong, but it tends to be a few at the same time. And it's just kind of staying focused and having a positive outcome throughout it that I felt I really, really resonated with.
Do you think there's ever any constructive role for despair?
I think it's important to feel every single emotion, whatever comes to us. But it's how you choose to walk through, even like the despair and the upset and whatever, you know, negative things come your way. I'm not saying to shy away from it. I'm actually saying the contrary is go through it, because there is something positive at the end. You will always learn a lesson. You'll always come out of it stronger. You'll always look at it in hindsight. And hindsight, I think, is so important. Perspective is so important, because so often, I think now I always just kind of think about things in a way of like, oh, you know, in a month's time, I'm probably going to be feeling so much differently about this, and this isn't going to feel as such a big deal. And so I try and put myself in the shoes of hindsight as I'm in the middle of something really daunting or, you know, scary or negative or whatever. It's just like, okay, this is something that I have to get through. And I see that as being optimistic in itself.
We did an interview on this show a couple months ago with a guy who, a researcher who's done some research on how well it can work if you write yourself a letter from the perspective of your future self. Mm. And it sounds actually like you're kind of doing a bootleg version of that.
Yeah. It sounds like it. I mean, writing a letter from your future self, I think, is something that sounds really appealing to me, something that I think I'd like to put into practice, because, yeah, I think it just makes me feel better when I'm like, okay, if it's bad now, it's going to get better. I'm going to look at this, you know, in a month's time and be like, right, I've grown for this, or this had to happen in order for this other thing to happen, whatever that may be. And so that's been encouraging throughout.
I can imagine somebody listening to this and thinking, well, what could go wrong? What could be bad in the life of a, you know, world famous pop star? How do you actually apply radical optimism in your life? What applies as difficult, or what is relevant in terms of being difficult or challenging?
I mean, things go wrong all the fucking time.
You can swear as much as you want on this show, just to be clear.
Okay, cool. For a second, I was like, oh no, maybe I'm not supposed to.
No, you're supposed
to. Yeah, I think things go wrong all the fucking time. I mean, just in the lead up to like putting a song out and you make a video or it doesn't happen, or things get shelved, or you feel like you have a whole plan and then all of a sudden something gets leaked or it goes out the window and you have to reevaluate everything that's happening. You know, you work on something for years and years and then you're about to put it out, and somehow, somewhere in transit, it comes out, people hear it, it's, you know, it's not the way that you intended it to happen. Even like when I put out my last record, I put it out in the hype, not, I guess not the hype, but the very beginning of the pandemic, at a moment where everything was so uncertain, where I'd made a record that was intended to be heard in clubs and out and made to make people dance. And, you know, I guess me, like anyone else, I was like, you know, maybe this will last a couple weeks, a month maybe. And my tour got postponed for 2 years. And I didn't even know if I was ever going to be able to tour it. I didn't really know what the new world was going to look like at that point. I didn't know if, you know, what my career was going to look like, how my album would, you know, be heard or listened to. And I'm just talking in like a work sense, seeing as you asked. But it's those things where it's like the rug gets pulled out from under your feet. You think you know what you're doing, and all of a sudden you have to reevaluate and change everything. And that happens so often. Like, I remember even being on tour just before the Future Nostalgia tour, and I had a creative director and they just kind of disappeared last minute. So I had to pick up the ball with my tour manager, Pete, who's now my creative director, and we just built everything together. And that was literally in rehearsals, about to go on stage, like maybe 2 weeks or something. And it's like, all right, let's build the creative. Let's change this up. Can we bring this in? Can we ship this in? How do we make this happen? Anything can happen, really. And those are really nerve-wracking moments, because I'm like, I'm about to embark on this massive tour and things just aren't ready, or people can let you down. People surprise you in a number of ways. People who you trust can also let you down. And I think you have to just roll with the punches and be adaptable to any situation and be like, okay, this has hurt me. How do I move on from this? How do I not let this close me up in a way? How do I still remain open-hearted even though I've been burnt? And that to me is remaining, I guess, optimistic when things go wrong. Sorry if I was rambling.
Not at all. This is a place where rambling is welcome, so don't worry about that. So you've had that experience where somebody you really trust, professionally or personally or both, has burned you, and you're trying not to allow that to make you kind of fully armored.
Absolutely. I think you have to. Of course, things are going to upset you and you're going to try and be guarded for a little while. But I think something that I think I like about myself is the fact that I can just remain open-hearted, and I just tell myself the worst thing that can happen is they can let me down. They can let me down, and I'll just have to pick everything up back up from that point. And yeah, that is always hard, the refining yourself or picking things back up, but it always tends to be for the best. Sometimes people end up doing you a favor, you know? And you have to just allow the universe to let people go out of your life. You know, people do fall away naturally. And although it's painful in the moment, it's more often than not for the best.
I can imagine there would be a huge temptation to be guarded and armored and closed off in your position, given the amount of scrutiny you face. I mean, how exposed you are on such a wide level.
Yeah. And I think one thing that I've just kind of come to realize is I can't change what people think of me or what they're going to write about me, especially in like tabloids or untrue things. Or, you know, for as long as I'm able to, I don't know, make my music and tour, and, you know, for those that are really interested to get to know me a bit better, to listen to different interviews or podcasts like this, where they can, I don't know, maybe get a little bit more of a grasp of who I am, maybe that will allow who I am to shine through. There's nothing I can do about that. That's just kind of the price I pay for the job I do, unfortunately. But I'd never want to stay guarded in the presence of that, because then that would just make my life difficult, you know? I think also it goes the same thing. It's like if I start thinking in that air of paranoia, I probably wouldn't leave my house. What? Because someone might take a photo, or someone might want to say something, or someone, you know, whatever it is, those stop me from having a very human experience. And that's not something that I want to hide away from, you know?
I also imagine it might be a problem as an artist to be somebody trying to create raw, meaningful, resonant music if you are spending huge chunks of your life, you know, in a state of paranoia.
Yeah, I think so. I think also some people get a real kick out of the tortured artists kind of thing, you know, and the sense of paranoia fueling the art and the creativity, which is totally fine. But for me, I think I need space to breathe and to be and to live life and experience it in a different way. And it's about the art of letting go. I think that is the crux of it all.
Let me just go back to radical optimism for a second. And this may be what I'm about to say might be just complete bullshit, but it based on my, you know, reading up on you to prepare for this interview, I mean, it's hard not to notice that your parents, you know, made a move that one could describe as a radical optimism of, you know, leaving a country that was in the middle of war and emigrating to London, which requires an enormous amount of internal strength, and then going back to that country. And then you at age 15 convinced your parents to let you return to London on your own in order to pursue, I don't think you told them this, but your agenda was to pursue ultimately a career in music. So yeah. Every part of that narrative that I just gave a tiny bit of, one could imagine that requiring a kind of radical optimism. Am I stretching here?
No, not at all. I think, you know, my upbringing really primed me for my job. I think also I moved around so much as a kid, you know, like you said, but I also, you know, changed school and went from English to Albanian and back to English and had to make friends in so many different circumstances. But I've also my whole life grown up watching my parents adapt to any circumstance that they were thrown into. And I think that upbringing just really primed me for the way that I see things. I think I've just become an adaptable person throughout, that no matter what comes my way, I'm ready for it. And it's just, I don't know, kept me really grounded, because I don't know, this sometimes as a job can just be so mad and you're thrown into such crazy situations beyond my wildest dreams. And I have to pinch myself a lot and be like, wow, like I'm on this stage or I'm doing this show, or, you know, and still keep my wits about me. And I think, yeah, radical optimism kind of flows throughout all of those changes, all of those life changes, and keeps me grounded.
Did you really fall over on stage?
Oh, yeah, multiple times. I fell over actually twice, once in Barcelona and once in Milan. In exactly the same place, actually. I slipped on one of my dancers, like sweat puddle twice. So then we ended up having to like change the routine, the choreography at that point. But I had really hurt myself. But I guess when I stood up, the adrenaline just kept me going. I think also just the embarrassment that I fell in front of so many people. So I just kind of got up and carried on, which I guess is radical optimism in itself. It's just like, smile it off and just keep going. It happened to me. It was also, I remember being in Detroit, and I was going down. I had this thing which I was calling the toaster, but it's basically like a electrical lift that would take me from on top of the stage to underground, so I could go and do a quick change of outfits. And the lift didn't go all the way down, and I was in such a rush that I was coming out the door and I had smacked my head onto the stage. And I was so like woozy in the midst, but obviously I have like a timer on how long I have to be back on stage. So I quickly change my outfit, run on stage, get up, start performing. And then I like forget my words. And I was just like panicking. I was like, oh shit, like I must have really hit my head really hard, and the adrenaline just kept me going. And anyway, I carried on despite the fact that I'd forgotten my words to one of my songs, I then just continued and pretend. I mean, what can you do at that point? It's just like a panic in the moment, and then I just pick it back up wherever I left off. But so many things can go wrong, you know. So many unexpected things. You just don't know what happens. Every night is different. You can preempt, you know, a performance. You can do as much rehearsal as you want, but nothing prepares you for the real thing. And you just have to be okay with letting go of that and seeing it as the beauty of performing live in itself and allowing yourself to just free fall in the moment and surrendering to it.
So wait, did you fire the sweaty dancer or just put the sweat danger further away from your choreographed
path? No, of course I didn't. Of course I didn't fire the dancer. It's like, you know, it's inevitable for mishaps to happen, especially after doing shows back to back nonstop. And on the days that happened, it was like the hottest month of the year and it's a high energy show. You just have to be adaptable, you know? You're like, all right, we're getting too sweaty now, so let's change it up. So yeah, for sure. You know, that's more the way to deal with it. No, imagine if I was like, okay, you sweat too much, we're done.
Coming up, Dua Lipa talks about her work ethic and her schedule. She has a very intimate relationship with her diary / calendar, her non-negotiables, including meditation, her social media hygiene, and her strategy of posting and ghosting. And then we talk about whether she's spiritual. I took my 9-year-old son to Washington, D.C. recently, where I was given a talk. And we, of course, wanted to find some things to do when I was not busy running my mouth. And I took a look at Viator, which is this great app and website where you can look at all the different activities that are available anywhere you're visiting. And I use this all the time when I'm traveling with my son because Viator serves up great ideas that are often really fun to pursue and do with my son. Viator is a tool you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world. The Viator app and website make it easy to explore over 300,000 travel experiences. That means you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Enjoy real traveler reviews to get insider information for people who've already been on the experiences that you are considering. And free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. That's VIATOR10 for 10% off. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. I love cats. I make no secret of that. We've got 4 cats. But here's the thing about felines. They poop a lot. You need kitty litter, and you need that kitty litter to do the job. Which is why I'm proud to recommend Tidy Care Alert, which has long-lasting ammonia control. So your house or your apartment or your yurt or wherever you live does not smell like you have 4 cats or however many cats you happen to have. No judgment here. It's low dust and lightweight, which means no lugging heavy bags of cat litter up the stairs. And it's from the brand most often recommended and personally used by veterinarians. Tidy Care Alert uses color-changing crystals to detect potential concerns and help put your mind at ease. Let Tidy Care Alert help keep an eye on your cat's health. Before we get back to the show, a quick reminder, in honor of World Meditation Week, we're offering 40% off a subscription to the 10% Happier app. Head over to 10%.com/40. That's 10% spelled out .com/40 to get started. In reading up on you, as I mentioned that I did last night, and while listening to a bunch of asking Alexa to shuffle a bunch of your songs, many of which I already knew from taking so many spin classes, et cetera, where you are regularly played.
I love to soundtrack a workout.
Exactly. So one of the things that keeps coming up in reading about you, and it really kind of comes through in this conversation thus far, is your work ethic. You know, Mark Ronson, the famous producer, talked about how you're like the only big star he's ever worked with who shows up on time. And if you're 2 minutes late, you text him, and you have this incredible schedule. You know, you you're not only making music and performing it, but you have a newsletter and your own podcast, and you know, you're very active on social media. You're also commenting a lot on current events. So I'm just curious, like, what, you don't have to have that schedule. Why do you do it? What's propelling you forward? What's it like to manage all of that?
Well, I think I've made to-do lists and given myself a schedule since I was a kid, like before I even needed a schedule per se in that sense. And I was just going to school, but I just loved the idea of keeping busy or planning. Like, I'm a big planner. I always love to just write down ideas and thoughts and dreams. And now, you know, my schedule is so down to the minute. And that's because I love to have time for myself as well. So I love to plan, you know, when I'm working, I'm working, and I'm there to do that. And then I know how much time I have to go and to my friends and go out for dinner and make plans and go away and explore and stay curious about the world. And I feel like I've been planting seeds my whole life in different ways about other stuff that I love to do. And I feel lucky that, like, my hobbies have become my job. And, you know, I have what I like to call a cultural concierge, which is with my newsletter Service 95, where I get to commission stories from all over the world. And that keeps me learning about things that are happening, and commenting, I guess, on current affairs is something that I guess comes as second nature to me, given my upbringing, given things that I just feel very close to and passionate about, whether it's like the refugee situation or women's rights. Like, those aren't things that I think about. Those are just more natural feelings of stuff that I just want to talk about and express and use my platform to have, I don't know, an opinion and say something that I feel like benefits more people, you know, somewhere where I can give a platform for voices that aren't being heard in the way that I believe that they should. And then I have a book club because I just love to read. And that's what I do to kind of get off screens and not check my phone and get away from this world and dive into another. And I don't know, I love using up all the time that I have. I feel so lucky to get to do all these things. And so I like to make the most of it. And I also live a busy life and I travel a lot around the world working. And so I like to make time for the people around me and my friends and my family, because that's really, really important to me.
So for the last 15 years, I've been lucky enough to have this amazing meditation teacher in my life. It's a guy named Joseph Goldstein. And he talks a lot about, and this is a big theme in Buddhism, and I guess I would consider myself a Buddhist, you know, to paying attention or being mindful of your motivation. And Joseph talks a lot about how motivation is, for, in his view, a range. It's not usually one thing that's motivating us. It's kind of a range of things. And so if I think about my, like you, I'm very busy. I'm using a term to describe myself that I'm not sure you would use, but I'm overscheduled, overcommitted. And so I like to think about, so what's in the range of motivation for me? And I think at the positive end of the spectrum, it's curiosity and, you know, it's altruism, like a sense of service. And then in the middle, maybe, mm-hmm. you know, it's fun and exciting. And then toward the lower end of the range, maybe, you know, some fear or greed. I'm curious, as you think about all of these things you're doing, what do you think are the pushing forces for you?
I think the pushing forces for me, I think for one is like the love of it, the kick that it gets me, that it gives me to be good at something that I set my mind to. I think that kind of feeling of growing in my performances or as a songwriter, like that really, that gives me, validation that I'm getting to where I want to be, or something that I've always kind of envisioned myself. I also feel like I don't know, that sense of service and being there to offer a space for different people to have interesting conversations, to use my platform, not just for, you know, my own gain, because that's just not so fun. You know, I feel like I live a very dual life where I love attention when I'm on stage and I'm performing and I'm being my more pop star self, I guess. But me and who I am at home is very different to that. And that's where the other things that I'm really passionate about come into play. And I think also the other thing is I also feel that if I don't work hard, I'm not going to be able to do the things that I love. Like, I think working hard is just like the number one. I also have a fear of like the rug being pulled out from under my feet at any moment. And so I want to make sure that, you know, I'm doing things that I'm really proud of and things that make me happy. And, you know, who knows what comes next or how long this will be. Or I'm hoping for a very long time, I hope I can make music forever and put it out and travel the world. But I don't know that. So I'm gonna have fun and I'm gonna enjoy every single moment for as long as I can.
Yeah, I mean, to state the blazingly obvious, you work in such a fickle industry. I can imagine, you know, a sense of, you know, what, how long can this possibly last?
Right. Yeah, and I think it's for as long as I'm doing things that I'm proud of and I'm making the music where I feel like I'm growing as an artist. And I'm having fun and I'm seeing the rooms grow and I'm getting to perform around the world. I'm having the time of my life and I'm going to enjoy it to the fullest. And I'm grateful that I also have so many other things that I also love to do. And that, you know, music is a big part of my life, but it's not all of me. And I have so many other things that I'm also really interested in. And I just love being able to do lots of things at the same time.
When I have well-known people on the show, I like to ask them about their like non-negotiables, the practices or ideas that are, you know, non-negotiably part of their schedule for keeping their shit together. So I'd be curious to like to hear what makes the list for you. I noticed in reading about you that you're interested in meditation and that you had even posted a guided meditation on your podcast feed. So let me start there. Was that a passing thing or do you have an abiding interest in that?
No, I enjoy meditation a lot. I try and incorporate it in my day, either every morning or every night, like before I start or as my day's ending. I have yoga practice as well, which also sends me into a meditative state because I think about nothing else apart from the practice in that moment and moving my body in a way that feels really nurturing. I think for me, it's having time for myself. Like I give a lot of time to my work. Most of my day revolves around my job, but it's just like important for me to have time for myself. That's definitely a non-negotiable in my schedule overall. Like I will always have plans in the evening that I put in the diary that everyone on my team can see. And that's a non-negotiable. That is time. That's for me. Or if I make a plan, I put not available and that's it. That's my time. And I think it's just kind of setting those boundaries where I work and I work really hard. And then when it's my time off, it's my time off. And I need that evening to myself. Or that's just, I'm not going to be as available as I am during the hours that I'm like working. And I'm fully aware that my job requires me to be on 24/7, which is why I need to kind of set those boundaries to just have a little time for myself and make time for my loved ones. So that's kind of where I head in non-negotiables, but I can be swayed. You know, that's the other thing. It's like if something comes up and it's like an amazing work opportunity, then I sacrifice the time that I've set aside for myself to go in and do the work and have this experience. Like I do that. It's not like, it's like a be all and end all. And I just won't do, you know, something important if it falls on a day where I had made plans to see, you know, my family. everyone's like super understanding of the work and its demands. So I do sway, but I think it's important for me and for my own mental health to know that I have this time to just relax and chill and not have to be on all the time.
Sounds smart. Let me click on meditation just for a second, just because it is a particular obsession of mine. I understand that you got turned onto it in a kind of moment, an anxious moment a couple of years ago. I'd just be curious to hear what flavors of meditation you've tried, what you find helpful, how you keep the habit up, any of that stuff.
Yeah, I initially got turned to meditation. It was probably around November 2019. And I remember that because it was a particularly just daunting time as I was releasing new music. And it's just, it's always nerve-wracking when you're finally putting stuff out into the world and you're like, okay, everyone's going to have their opinion. Everyone's going to say what they want. I had to take myself off Twitter and certain social medias. And I was like, all right, I'm going to just practice mindfulness and meditation and just give myself that grace and that time to just zone out and be with my breath and try and take out any intrusive thoughts or anything that I think could be working against me at this time. And I really do guided meditation because it's really helpful for me to listen to someone else's voice or do it through music. And that really works for me. And the way I keep it up is I put it in my diary and I make sure that I set specific time to do it. And therefore, when I see it and it's there and I've set out the time for it, it's going to happen. More often than not, it happens, you know? And it keeps me organized. It keeps me in check. It keeps me... And it's important, you know? Sometimes I have to put in time for myself into the schedule, but I get it and I do it. And it's super, super helpful. So... That's how it happens.
With these repeated references to your diary, I think over here in the US we call it our calendar. I'm just picturing, what's the name of that movie with Reese Witherspoon where she's like the good student? Election? Election. She played, there's this movie that came out a million years ago where she plays like the goody two shoes, like hyper organized, borderline OCD. I'm just picturing, I mean, I don't know you at all, but that's what keeps coming to mind. Tracy Flick, I think her name was. Any resonance for you in that character?
Well, I haven't seen it, but I think just your brief description sounds on it. It's funny because I was never like obsessed with school or anything in that sense. Like I love to learn things, but I love the idea of school much more now and learning now that I get to kind of do it on my own accord rather than like what I was told to do. But I've just always been organized. I loved setting things to time and planning and maybe it's an OCD of sorts, I don't know, but I get shit done. I just do. I make use of all the time that I have and it makes me feel accomplished at the end of the day when I'm like, right, I've done everything I have to do. And, you know, it's just a thing that my parents would always say, don't leave today's thing for tomorrow because things are just going to pile up. And it's so much better to just get things over and done with. You finish it. You finish it once properly. You never want to do the same job twice either. So the first time you do it properly. Don't be sloppy because you're always going to have to come back and finish it off. So those are just like life things that I like to live by. Never do the same job twice and never leave today's thing for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Those are really important things. And then I can have more time for myself.
How do you talk to yourself as you're doing all of this? Are you tough on yourself, relentless, self-lacerating, self-critical, or are you, you know, supportive and like a nice coach?
I don't know. I get up and I just do it. I don't really I mean, I'm not superhuman, so I don't really beat myself up about things if really, like, time doesn't permit that I'm able to, you know, finish something off. It's the way that I like to live my life in, like, you know, get shit done today so you don't have to do it tomorrow. So tomorrow you can have more time to hang out with your friends. It's like the kind of thing that you do when you're a kid. It's like, finish your homework so I can go outside and play, you know? That's kind of the way I see it. And I think I used to be harder on myself when I first started out, just whether it was like in a writing session or where I felt like I just had to prove myself or assert myself in different rooms. I think now I have more autonomy over the space that I work in. And I don't know, in that sense, I'm much, much gentler on myself. So yeah, I think now I'm in a good space.
I'd be curious about your other non-negotiables. I've heard you mention like spending time with your friends and family, that feels like an important thing for you. What else would make the list?
Yeah, time to do my yoga. And yeah, I think just that kind of time for myself. I think everything else, I love working. I really do. Mm-hmm. I love being busy. I thrive on doing lots of different things. So as long as I have a good work-life balance, then I'm happy. Like, I never shy away from working too hard. I just love to have the other aspect of it as well. And yeah, because that's important. Like, I have to put time into my relationships and I want to be there. Like, I don't really like missing out on important dates. And I have to, you know, my job doesn't always permit me to be around as much as I would like to. And so I think it's just kind of figuring out the balance there.
What's your social media hygiene like? You mentioned you getting off of Twitter, now X, a while ago. You have the population of several small nations following you on Instagram. How do you stay engaged without driving yourself nuts based on every comment that comes over the transom?
Well, yeah, taking myself off Twitter was the greatest thing, or X now, is the greatest thing that I've ever done. I think there's just so much energy and negativity and a lot of voices. And I realized that what things were being said on Twitter wasn't a direct depiction of what was happening in the real world. You know, I would go for a walk in the park and someone would come up to me and just be really lovely about something. And I'm like, oh, like maybe people don't feel a type of way about me or whatever, which is what I maybe thought, you know, from what I was reading online on Twitter. And yeah, there's like nice things, but I feel like the bad things kind of linger in your mind the longest. And so I was like, let me just take myself off it. And all of a sudden I was becoming more productive. I was feeling better about myself. I was working in a really efficient way. And that was just a complete 180 for me emotionally and in my work and everything. So I loved doing that. And then Instagram for me is fun. It's something that I've always had. I use it like a blog and I can just post, you know, pictures from my week. And I don't really think about it so much, but I also don't read the comments on there as much. And I don't spend very much time on it. So I post and I ghost. and that just really works for me. Like, I don't know. I just figured it out in a way that allows me to be present, allows me to show a side of my life, my personal life, my work, to be able to connect with my fans, and then to dip out. And that feels good and healthy to me.
Mm, yes, that sounds right. I do want to save a little bit of time to talk about the new record, but let me ask one last question. I'm curious, it's kind of related to the meditation part of it. Do you consider yourself spiritual? Are you active in any specific faith?
No, I'm not active in any specific faith, but I do think of myself as a spiritual person. I think I'm very drawn into I don't know, astrology and like the beliefs of destiny and being at the right place at the right time. And, you know, what's meant to be will be. I think I like to lead life with like a spiritual sense and, you know, if you see the signs, to not like shy away from them and that kind of thing. Like, I think it's important to have a spirituality basis. I like to always think that things have a deeper meaning when they happen. And I think I kind of love the poetry and the beauty behind that.
If you see the signs, don't shy away from them. What do you mean? Can you give me an example of that?
I think, I don't know, just in life, you meet someone and you feel like you're on the same page, and whether that's creatively or romantically or in a work sensibility, you're just like, okay, that's a brainwave. Or sometimes I feel like I see angel numbers everywhere. Which is like, I see the number 22 or 222, and I'm like, okay, I'm on the right path. I'm working towards something, or everything is aligning and it feels right. And those things, I feel, I don't know, keep me positive. And I love to see like the spirituality and the beauty in that. I also love the idea of, crystals and healing powers and nature and grounding your feet into, you know, the earth and the power of that, and embracing all of those aspects. Yeah, that's kind of how I see spirituality. I also feel like performing is a very spiritual experience, and the energy that you get from I don't know, a massive audience. Like I feel that. I also feel like if I go into any places of worship, I love to go to temples and churches, and even though I don't subscribe to a particular faith, I find all of those incredibly moving. I feel energies in all of them. I love to visit them. I love to sit in, and I love the idea of prayer, and I think it's a beautiful send-off of energy, a form of manifestation, a mantra of some sort. All of those things I find incredibly moving. And so I like to do that.
I'm hearing like some mix of intuition, you know, in following some gut feeling when you meet somebody or encounter an idea and being open to that. And then also kind of a mysticism or curiosity, interest in something that science has not yet validated.
Definitely. I think there's, to me, I think it's beautiful to think of things being bigger than us, you know, whatever that may be. I'm a firm believer in energy, and I love mysticism. And I think it's beautiful, you know, where when I talk about places of worship, whether that's, you know, a temple, a church, a mosque, whatever it is, the collective idea that people come in and, you know, they're praying and they have their wishes and they're sending out their energy into whatever higher power they believe in. I think it's a special place to go to and pray, I guess.
This is a bit random, but you mentioned earlier having a book club, and I'm reading a book right now that's just, I'm personally a bit of a hardened skeptic. My parents were scientists and I'm married to a scientist, but there's this book called Our Share of Night. Have you heard of this book?
No, I haven't heard of it.
It's by an Argentine woman, and it's it's technically a horror book. It's about a guy who can see and talk to and work with the dead and has all of these powers. But anyway, it is literature. It's not the normal type of thing that I would read, but anyway, it's just popping into my head as you're
talking.
That's
interesting. I mean, I also think, you know, I think some people are so in tune with that. I believe that for sure. I think there are some people who can access another energy. I think they can feel things on people. I've worked with very powerful acupuncturists who just hit a nerve at a certain point and you have this whole release of energy, or you just, you know, I think some people have it in them where they can, I don't know. I think energy is incredibly powerful, and I firmly, firmly believe that there are people who can tap into the unknown.
Coming up, Dua Lipa talks about the process of creating her new album. Actually, I took notes during this. She had a lot of things to say about creativity and how to run that process that landed for me, especially on the crucial role of talking to yourself in the right way. This episode is brought to you by M&M's. It's spring, and that means graduation season. Turn milestones into fun moments by creating personalized graduation gifts on MMS.com. Now you can design M&M's as unique as your graduate. Choose from over 20 colors and add the person's name, graduation-themed graphics or photos, which will be printed directly on the candy. Next, choose customized gift packaging like a class of 2024 candy dispenser or gift jar. The nice folks at M&M's sent me a bottle filled with customized M&M's. They have my face on them. Not quite sure whether I'm comfortable serving this at a party, but it's really fun to look at and, of course, delicious to eat. And I definitely think it's a great gift idea for graduation or anything else. Visit MMS.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's MMS.com. Use code HAPPIER to receive 15% off your next order. I'm a big fan of athleisure. I might have mentioned this before. As you know, I have the great privilege of working from home. So sweatpants, sweatshirts, comfortable t-shirts, I'm in the market for all of those things, especially when the price is right. And I've been turned on recently to a company called Quince, and I've been wearing a bunch of their stuff. If you watch the YouTube version of this show, you will probably see it. They have high-quality pieces that never go out of style that you will be wearing year after year. They've got all the seasonal must-haves, like 100% European linen shirts from $30, performance polos, and versatile flow-knit activewear. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. I was padding around the house last night in my Quince sweatpants. They look good, they feel good, and it's good to know that they're produced ethically. I'm all in. Upgrade your wardrobe. Go to quince.com/happier for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/happier to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/happier. Let's wrap up by talking a little bit about the new record. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
As we record this, there are only 3 songs available, which I spent some time with. And I'm quite a bit older than you and, you know, classic indie rock dad. And so I'm quite familiar with Tame Impala and Kevin Parker, who one of your creative partners. And I thought, and I could be wrong about this, and I'd be interested to hear whether I'm right. I thought I heard his fingerprints, his kind of psych rock fingerprints on the song Houdini. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Kevin, I worked with Kevin on all 3. So Houdini, Training Season, and Illusion. We actually did 8 out of the 11 songs that are on the record. We did them together. So there's a lot more where you can hear his fingerprints throughout. I absolutely loved working with Kevin. He's incredible. And we had amazing creative chemistry, and we worked together with Danny Hall and Tobias Gesso Jr. and Caroline Aylin. And there together, we formed what we like to call our band. And every day was very exciting to go into the room and just experiment and go into a more psychedelic, more organic dance exploration of all of our favorite things. And we just had an absolute blast doing it. It was so much fun. And just spending a year and a half with them in a room and just growing and learning and experimenting, it's just been one of the greatest experiences of my career. So I just, yeah, I've loved every moment.
How do you manage the power dynamics in a room like that? You're the boss, but you also don't want to terrify the people working for you. Like, how do you creatively, how do you make that flow?
I think we just were very lucky, you know, to be in a room. I think for me, the important thing is to be able to dictate, you know, the session in a way that I want it to get the best out of myself and be like, this is the story that I want to tell. This is what I want to write about today. And also allowing everyone to be themselves is so important. You know, you want everyone to be completely expressive and be able to say what they think and to have their own opinions. And I think that's the healthiest thing in a creative room, is allowing everyone to be themselves. And everybody is so unique and has such wildly different personalities. And us all being able to let that out in that room kind of helped us make this record. Because I think all of us coming together and creating something completely unique to each of us was so much fun. And so, yeah, that's the thing. It's everyone had a voice and opinion, and we all worked collectively together to try and make the best possible thing we could.
But that is, like, from a management, and that is what you're doing. I mean, this is a work product and you are the boss. From a management standpoint, what you pulled off there over that year and a half is not easy. There's been a lot of research into it, this concept of psychological safety, which is the ability of the leader of the team to create an environment where everybody feels safe to speak up, no matter where they are on the hierarchy. You may be blissfully unaware of all of this, but you somehow, it appears, managed to create that on your team.
Well, I think I like to be able to, I create that throughout, not just in the studio, but with my band, with my dancers, with my life, you know, my touring team, with my management, with everyone. Like, I want everyone to be able to express themselves. For me, that's the only way that I'm going to be able to grow as well, is if I have honest people around me. Like, I don't want yes men whatsoever. And so I think allowing people and being very receptive to their ideas as well, and understanding that I'm not the smartest person in the room and I'm here to learn as well, and I'm just equally as part of the team, I think that's what maybe is the driving force. Is I like to embed myself within the team rather than sit on top of it.
Is it true that in typical overachiever fashion, you wrote 97 songs for this record?
Yeah, I wrote 97 songs. We wrote a lot of songs, but not all of them are good. You know, that's the other thing. Like, I have to write myself into a good idea. So I have to keep writing. And that helps me get to where I want to be. It pushes me and propels me into writing something that's actually worth other people hearing. I have to get through the shit ones first.
I really like that. I'm writing that down, actually. Write yourself into a good idea, meaning you start somewhere and just see where it goes, and eventually, by giving yourself permission to create something shitty, something good will emerge.
Yes, I think so. You have to let go of your inhibitions. You have to have that, like, childlike freedom. You have to be shit to be good. You know, you have to get through all those other ideas to then, you know, be able to also see when something's great and appreciate it in a different way. Yeah, you just have to be gentle with yourself and allow that free flow to happen. And I think that goes back to the thing where you asked me, you know, who are you to yourself, in a way, you know, what kind of person, or how do I speak to myself? And I think in that sense, that's where I really let loose the most. And it's like, hey, it's okay. Like, you have to just get through that. Like, it's not the end. Like, you're not going to suck forever. It gets better. And then you'll get to the good stuff.
You're not going to suck forever. I am engaged in my own much less interesting creative work. I write books, and that is the thought. I don't know if I would have been able to articulate it the way you just did, but that is the thought. On days when it's not working, you do feel like the magic is gone forever.
Yeah. And you just have to be gentle with yourself. I used to be so much harder, and I'm like, all right, today the muse is tired. She didn't show up today. She, you know, because when I think about songs, they come from nowhere, you know? And so and it's the same, I guess, with writing books and stories, and you're plucking things out of thin air, and some days it's going to be great and some days it's not. And you have to be gentle with yourself and be like, all right, today it's not working. I'm going to leave the desk, or I'm going to leave the room. I'm going to go and do something else. I'm going to go and experience life. I'm going to go and do something fun. And I'll come back tomorrow and just see where we're at. And a lot of time that helps. I also love, like, you write something, you feel like you're going round and round in circles on the same thing. And then you're like, okay, I don't even know if this is good anymore. So I leave it. I come back with fresh ears tomorrow. Fresh perspective is so enriching because you're like, okay, this is great. Also, you know, I like to play music to people whose opinion I really value. And then I hear it differently. The second mm-hmm. I play it, I don't even need them to say anything. I hear it critically yeah. differently, you know? And so that's really helpful as well. I think all those little things, it's just like, don't be hard on yourself. Like, a creative process takes time, and just give yourself that grace. It's so important.
Well, I know you well enough now to know about the sanctity of your diary. So I'm going to be very careful about letting you get out of here on time. But let me ask my two final questions that I like to ask. One is there somewhere you were hoping to go that we didn't get to?
I don't know. I think it's, again, it's like this was the conversation that was supposed to happen. These are the things that we were supposed to express and talk about today. And I think that's good with me.
Excellent. And then finally, can you just remind everybody of the name of your new record and anything else you want people to know about your podcast? Can you just go into self-promotion mode? Do you mind?
Sure. So my new album is called Radical Optimism, and it's, yeah, probably my most like honest, free flowing body of work, where I wrote it kind of like a diary, where every day I went in and just kind of wrote about what happened the day before, kind of. And I just let it evolve throughout, and it's the only body of work where I just kept going back and changing it, because I think my perspective kept changing. Like, a month later, I would hear the song and be like, actually, I don't feel that way. So I'm going to write some more and change it up until I felt like it was perfect in my eyes. And I'm very excited for everyone to hear it. And I'm very proud of it. I feel like I've grown so much throughout the process of writing it. So I'm looking forward to everyone checking that out. And then the other side of me, the podcast me, the book club me, that I do through my company, Service 95, which is something that I'm really passionate about, because that's kind of like the media side of my brain, where I get to commission interesting stories from all over the world and stories that people wouldn't necessarily go looking for. And we do a newsletter which goes into your inbox. It's a free newsletter that goes into your inbox every week. And you can subscribe by going on service95.com, or you can go on the website and all our newsletters are up on there, and we do it weekly. And alongside that, I do my podcast, which you can check out wherever you get your podcasts. And I speak to really interesting people about their life and their experience and how they got to where they are and how they started. And every single story is so different and so inspiring. And I've left every conversation really energized, whether it's with Bryan Stevenson or Monica Lewinsky or Elton John or Pedro Almodovar or Greta Gerwig or Esther Perel. I've had such a wide range of different guests that have just moved me, and I've just learned so much. So that's something that I really love and enjoy. And I have a book club where I speak to different authors from all around the world about books that I've read of theirs that I've loved, and just to dive in deeper into the stories that they've chosen to tell, which is something that I love doing. And I do those monthly with a book of the month that we do on Service 95. And those are just a few of the things that I love to do.
Dua Lipa, it was great to talk to you. Thanks for making the time.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. This is great.
Likewise. Thanks again to Dua Lipa. Go check out her new record. If you want to hear other well-known folks talk about their non-negotiables. We'll post some links in the show notes to my interviews with people like Bill Hader and Pema Chodron. We're also going to post some episodes on hope or radical optimism that we've done with people like Jacqueline Mattis, George Mumford, and Sebane Selassie. Don't forget to check out danharris.com if you want to sign up for my newsletter, where I sum up the key learnings for me of the show each week and also make some cultural recommendations. Thanks to everybody who worked so hard to make this show a reality. Our producers are Lauren Smith and Tara Anderson, and we get additional production support from Colin Lester Fleming, Isabel Hibbard, Carolyn Keenan, and Wombo Wu. Marissa Schneiderman is our senior producer. Kevin O'Connell is our director of audio and post-production. And DJ Kashmir is our managing producer. He and I got up at an ungodly hour in order to record this interview with Dua Lipa, who is over in London. So thank you to DJ for that. And Nick Thorburn of the band Islands wrote our theme. If you like 10% Happier, and I hope you do, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.
I'm Shimol Yai, and I have a new podcast called The Competition. Every year, 50 high school senior girls compete in a massive scholarship competition.
I wouldn't say I have an ego problem, but I'm extremely competitive.
All of the competitors are used to being the best and the brightest, and they're all vying for a huge cash prize.
This will probably be the most intense thing you've ever gone through in your life.
I remember that feeling because I was one of them. I lost. But now I'm coming back as a judge and also a kind of teen girl anthropologist. Because if you want to understand what it's like to be a young woman in America today, The Competition's not a bad place to start.
Hopefully no one will die on stage tonight.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.